Recording?
Yeah, recording.
This is Mom's Basement Podcast, episode 39. Wow, we're almost to 40. Almost middle age.
Yeah, this time we get to answer the important question. Who is this God King? And why did we kill it so easily?
And were we supposed to kill it? Because I'm pretty sure the text indicated that he was a good guy.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, let's continue. Let's move on to the actual introduction here. Go ahead, Will.
Sure. Tomorrow morning, we are going to talk about Daniel Chan's game, God King. And then we're going to talk about randomness. Not another random bullshit conversation, but we're going to talk about the role that randomness plays in resolution, in character generation, in some RPGs, and how we feel about that. But first, we're going to talk about God King. Does anyone have any introductory thoughts before we start talking about God King? Anything?
Oh, I got one.
Okay.
It's fucking awesome.
Is it?
All right, moving on. Rudy, what do you feel about it?
Oh, well.
Okay.
So, God King.
Yes. Rudy, it sounds like you've been anointed to start this conversation.
Right. I think God King is God. But no, seriously, I think this game has a really smooth setup for rules. It ran pretty smoothly. The only problems we had were with the shitty software we used to do card drawing and whatnot.
Right.
But I like the way...
Well, before you say what you like, maybe we want to talk about what the game is. Because people may not have read the game.
And fucking awesome is not a really... it's not a really good descriptor of what the game is about.
Yeah, well, basically, God King is a game that kind of mixes, I guess, Eastern mythology, like Japanese and Chinese mythology, from what I can tell, with kind of a fantastical setting. And you play as five characters.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to have five players, but we only had three, so we just each played two characters, and the GM played one. But basically, it's all these people on a quest to go to this mystical land to find the God King.
Right. And I'm going to read Daniel Chan's blurb right off his website. Because I'm lazy. Five adventurers defy the orders of their emperor and set off across the sea in search of a magical lost continent believed to have disappeared long ago, if, in fact, it existed at all. God King is a role-playing game with playing card-based mechanics for 3 to 5 players. Each player has a distinct role that is integral to the survival of the group, meaning everyone must work together in order to succeed. Things are complicated, though, as each of the characters have their own specific reasons for joining the journey that will put them at odds with the others. And that last sentence got at what I thought was really cool about this game.
Yeah, same here.
This is fundamentally a game... Well, it's an adventure game in the same sense that D&D is an adventure game. Well, it's not really, because it's a narrative adventure game, right? It's a storytelling game about a group of adventurers who set off on a grand quest. And there have been a lot of games like this. It's been done, and it's been done, and it's been done. But what Daniel does here that is really fucking cool is he, instead of focusing on the quest, instead of making the focus of attention like, five dudes who have to work together to get this mystical artifact or to meet, you know, to have this encounter with divinity, with the God King. He turns the attention on the dynamics of the group itself. And he does it in a way that plays up the social dynamics between the players. He creates a socially competitive game. Well, a game that's both socially competitive and cooperative, where you need to work together in order to succeed, but where each character has their own goals, and where, you know, you may find that you need to stab another character in the back in order to get what your character wants. And it's that tension between cooperating, between working together, and, you know, the secret competition that exists there. In the players hidden, in the characters, excuse me, hidden motivations, where this game really shines, I think.
Yep.
But Rudy, I cut you off.
And that, well, that's basically what I was going to say, is the social mechanics of this game are really what makes it kind of shine. And, as far as, and each of the character, or each of the players gets a different role. Like, there is the scholar, the mystic, the warrior, the navigator, and what's the last one?
The healer?
Oh, the healer, right, right. And basically, their role in the group is actually important. It's not just like a, it's not just like D&D where you have different classes, but
yeah,
the classes are...
It's essential, much, really.
Right, because if you lose someone, then you're taking penalties basically based on what the person did for the group. Like, say if you lose the scholar, you're no longer able to translate the native language, so you can't speak with people, and you can't, you know, you can't really communicate with the locals. And, like, if you lose the...
Navigator?
The navigator, you're just kind of lost.
Right, getting to just getting from one place to another becomes a challenge.
Yeah, which I thought was pretty cool. I like the fact that he gives some power to the actual role, so that they're not just, you know, kind of static classes or that type of thing.
Well, plus that also makes it to where it isn't easy to kill off another character because you'll actually need them, or like, you know,
right,
to lock them away, like, you know, like,
right,
maybe like the locals are more advanced and they have like prison systems and stuff like that. You can't allow some of the other characters to be taken away from you because their abilities are so important to your group until
right,
they're no longer needed by you.
Right.
Right.
Even though you may have a reason to want that to happen to them. And that gets at the other really cool mechanic here, which are the truths. At the beginning of the game, you draw a card, and that card tells you what your truth is. And your truth is basically a secret that you're hiding from the other characters. And in some cases, it's like innocuous. You know, it's something that isn't going to harm you and isn't necessarily going to harm the other characters. You know, that we're, like, in some cases, you just need a lot of money to save a family member. You know, and that might bring you in conflict, with the other players, but it might not. It might be something that you can work together with the other players to coordinate. But some of them are downright vicious. Like, one of them, probably my favorite, is that you've been given orders to assassinate one of the other player characters. And so
mm-hmm,
you're going to have to come into conflict with them eventually in order to, you know, achieve your goal. So it's that tension between knowing, you know, your goal is to assassinate this dude, but knowing that the minute that knife goes down, your group is going to be crippled from then on out, because you're going to have to carry around a penalty caused by losing a member of the party, and also you won't have their skill set to lean upon to help you, you know, resolve challenges. And
right,
that's really cool that it creates that kind of social tension. And that internal tension, that cognitive dissonance, you know, over what you should do in a situation, because part of you wants one thing and the other part wants another.
Right.
Alex.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the card mechanic itself that's used. It's a normal, you know, 52 deck, you know, with, you know, plus two cards for the Jokers. And, I mean, the way it was set up is, it works, but I feel like there needs to be some tweaking with it myself, because there's so much, I mean, it probably pretty much does what the author wants it to do, but it feels a little flawed to me. Because I'll give an explanation of what it actually does, and I'll tell you why I think it's a little flawed. But it also might be a perk of why the person wanted this to happen. Basically, what happens is each person draws two cards, and the cards themselves, the only thing that matters is if you get an ace. Otherwise, it's just a color. And color represents physical. Yeah, or a joker. Those are the only two cards that really matter outside of their colors. I was just trying to do the color thing.
Okay.
And black represents physical attributes. Red represents mental attributes. And so whenever you do a challenge, you flip over, you keep those two cards in your hand, but you flip over four cards that are yours. And I think you're not supposed to show what your cards are before the reveal. And whatever the challenge is, you only use that color. So, like, you know, if you're fighting somebody and you know you're putting the whoop ass on them, you only use black cards, and you should only try to use black cards from the two cards in your hand. Or if you're trying to, like, negotiate, trying to get past, like, a guard, then you use red, you know, stuff like that. And I like the, because it was very simplistic on trying to say, like, okay, what are you trying to do here? You know, you use this color instead. You know, it was very easy to determine, like, what was going on to make it work, for the resolution to work. The problem that I had was with all the bonuses that can affect the outcome of a simple flip like that. And my problem with it also, like I said, it has to do with probably what the author wanted to do. 'Cause what happens is, if you have trusts, you can influence each other by giving each other cards in order to affect the outcome. And the thing that makes this very difficult is, if you all trust each other, or, you know, if certain groups wanted to, they can personally sabotage your hand, or at least try to, if it's possible. They can try and sabotage your hand in order to make you fail, or they can add cards to help you succeed.
Right.
So, like, I say it was kind of a negative, because it ultimately, you're not in charge of you succeeding or not. You are, the only thing that's in charge of you succeeding or failing is the willingness of your allies.
Well, I think that's sort of true. Just to clarify, what you're trying to do is build the best 5-card hand using 4 cards that you're dealt off the deck, and one of the 2 cards that are currently in your hand, that your bank of cards. And you're trying to get the most out of the color that you need. So if you need black, you're trying to get as many of those 5 cards to be black cards.
Right.
And you're at the beginning of the game, you establish that you trust certain other player characters. So the navigator might trust the healer. And by saying that you trust the healer, you're allowing the healer to add cards from his bank, from his 2-card bank, to your hand whenever he wants to. So he can do that to help you. He can say, okay, well, you needed at least 3 black cards to beat this challenge, and you only got 2. I have 1 black card in my hand. I can give it to you. But he could also throw a red card at you to try to sabotage you, if that's what he was trying to do. I thought that was really cool. The trust mechanic, I think, really plays into that social competitiveness, and the fact that you make a decision to give trust to someone else, you know. It's not just like anyone can decide they're going to step in and sabotage your hand. You were making a calculated decision. This is the character I'm going to trust. And it can evolve in play. It can change in play. That adds a new element of complexity to the game, and of social strategy, you know, picking who you're going to give your trust to, in the hopes that you're picking the right person who won't try to sabotage you, who will try to help you. I think that really ties together well with the other social mechanics and adds and makes the resolutions themselves more compelling, especially since it's such a basic, straightforward resolution system. Having that extra element of subterfuge there, I think adds a lot, personally.
All right, so what I was getting at, you know, with the, you know, where your allies can make or break you, was when we were playing in the playtest there, my goal was to kill the healer, and I actually personally sabotaged the navigator because I just felt like, you know, screwing with him.
Right.
So that's what I meant by, like, you, like, a lot of it has to do with the player, with what they want to do versus, like, you know, the player's allies. Because I was the navigator's ally. I trusted him. He trusted me. And we screwed each, I screwed him over unknowingly.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Even though I was trying to go after the healer. So I basically, I was just a dick throughout a lot of the conflicts. And the system allowed me to be a dick.
Right. And I didn't mind that, but I could see how some people would. If having total autonomy over your character is something that's important to you, then this probably won't work for you.
Yeah, that's why I was getting after the negative. But if you can get past that, then everything works just fine.
Yeah.
Rudy?
I was just going to say, as far as the trust mechanic, I think that is really good at not only adding that social dynamic to the game, but also it kind of, it sort of seems like it filters the action well so that, like, the, you know, it filters the drama pretty well so that things are actually dramatic when they happen. And, like, it kind of paces the game as you go. Because, like, in our game that we played, like, everything pretty much happened at the end. And it was a build-up towards that. Mm. And then everybody kind of dropped their secrets or whatever at the end. And, you know, it was built up to, and it just led into it pretty nice.
Yeah, I think it does help to pace the game. And those bank cards help too, because you can, I held an ace to the very end to use it at a very important moment in the plot. And I think being able to do that is really cool and adds a little bit more to mechanics. One thing that didn't totally work for me, I'm very much a simple mechanics kind of guy. You guys know that. Anyone who's listened to the podcast before knows that. I am a champion of simple, intuitive, straightforward mechanics. But I felt like these mechanics could have provided a little more. I felt like having every conflict and challenge come down to draw four cards and add one to your hand, you succeed or you don't. It felt a little simplistic to me, and it felt like it didn't add too very much to the fiction. You know, it didn't really generate fiction. It just generated resolution. It just said, okay, throw our cards down. This guy wins. That dictates what happens next. But it doesn't inspire what happens next. What I'm saying is it doesn't really generate new ideas. He has a really cool idea with the way which truth you get at the beginning is linked to the number on the card. And I wish there was something inside the resolution mechanics that linked each of the different ranks of cards to different possible outcomes in play. Like maybe little features of play. Like, you know, like a four means that some act of treachery happens during the resolution. Or a, you know, a 3 means something goes wrong in a very specific kind of way. I don't have good examples here, you know. You know, a 3 means something goes wrong involving a character's pride or involving something they fear or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Where cards don't just resolve. They generate part of that scene. And I think you could have done that and still kept the resolution mechanic he has largely intact, but have the cards add more flavor and color and more plot hooks and more inspiration to the scene.
Well, yeah. Going off there, like what you're suggesting seems like you would make it a little more, a lot more complicated because you would have to like a chart for the numbers and stuff.
Yeah.
But like, I understand what you're coming from here. And what I would probably recommend is not a number by number explanation of each, what each number would do, but more like a, you picture like, let's go with like, with my thing. Like I picked a 9 and mine involves killing somebody. Mm-hmm. Now we'll get give 2 ideas of, like what would happen if I succeed in any conflict? What would happen if I fail in any conflict? How would I act? Like in that, and that could help mold stuff.
Mm.
Or like, what happens if I get a joker? What happens if I get an ace?
That's true.
Right.
Like what will my character be more inclined to do if I got those kind of cards? Like those kind of scenario wins.
No, and that
would make it not so complicated, but complicated enough.
That's a good idea. Specifically having the card that's tied to your truth do something when it comes up.
Yeah.
Like, if you do a 9, like you said, when you drew your truth, whenever a 9 comes up in your hand in play, it does something. And I know that would mean kind of revealing your secret, which could be tricky, since the truths are supposed to be kept secret. But something like that, where something about the cards inspires the narrative, inspires the fiction, would have been cool. Would have been more interesting than the current mechanic, which feels rather detached from what's going on in the story.
Rudy, how do you feel about it? Because get your take on this.
Yeah, I think basically that's a good idea, that there should be something to kind of segue into your truths or your secrets. Because I found in play that it was kind of a little difficult to actually, like, I don't know, really show that my secrets, kind of like tip my hand for my secrets as far as what I had. But I felt that I still should be playing towards it some way. But I didn't really get the opportunity to because of the way resolutions played out. So.
Right. Yeah, I had that problem too.
So I think something to kind of help segue into your truths would be a lot better.
How did you feel about, and I'm throwing this at you guys, how did you feel about the setting and narrative stuff? The creative content, I don't know how you want to describe it, but yeah, that part of the game, because we didn't really touch on that part of the game.
Well, I thought the setting... Oh, sorry. What? I thought the setting...
You're going to do it.
All right. I thought the setting was interesting, but I didn't really fully get like how I was supposed to use it to, inspire new ideas, kind of. But, because there's a section on, like, for the narrator, that seems like it's kind of like a step-by-step of their journey. And I wasn't sure if you're supposed to read that and, you know, look for ideas there, or what you're supposed to do with that. But I thought overall the setting was interesting. It's just that I guess in the game we played, it didn't really the background info that was in the book didn't really come up a lot.
Yeah. And I guess that's up to the narrator, but I agree with you that the book is very, or well, maybe not very, but rather wishy-washy about how the setting content that appears at the end of the book, and there's a lot of it, and it's very compelling, and it's very interesting. It really makes you, it's very successful at making the setting seem mysterious and captivating and tantalizing. I guess tantalizing is really the word, without making it seem corny, which is always the danger here. The setting didn't feel corny at all to me. It really felt like there was just enough bits and pieces of that world to make you want to explore it. But what was missing was real concrete advice for how the narrator was supposed to take that information and incorporate it into play and use it to direct play and to structure play. That was missing, at least in the way I read it. And he has a section, like you said, that's advice for the narrator, but most of that is like the basics of narrative play. Like, these are the basics of how to play a game that's story-centric as opposed to combat-centric and things like that. But not really... And he does say, you know, a lot of this needs to be decided based on what the group wants out of the game, and that's good. But I would have liked some more concrete direction about how to take all that cool setting stuff and make it into a cool session or a cool campaign or whatever. Alex?
Yeah, I ultimately agree about, like, the setting itself was decent. It was something that I really didn't care for, and since I was the narrator, I liked the concept of, like, you know, strangers going to a foreign land in order to, you know, do probably nefarious things, because, you know, they all have their own agenda, and I liked that concept, but there wasn't really enough fleshed out in order for me to, like, really do, pretty much do, not like what I want, but just do things that will affect that will have, like, guidelines for, like, the locals and such.
Yeah.
There really wasn't enough guidelines of, like, what the society is at large. I mean, there are some things in there, but pretty much I have to make it up as I go, and because of that, I really didn't pay attention to that much of the that section for the book. Of, like, what I needed to use for inspiration. I just used whatever I felt was going to work.
Right. Yeah, I think what it's definitely missing is, like, hooks to get the players involved more in the setting.
Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, so that... I mean, just simple things like, you know, like, some hooks, some adventure hooks, some, like, stuff about the... You know, like Alex said, like the people who live there and stuff, and maybe things that kind of contrast with the truths more so that you kind of get those into a more central place in the game. But, yeah, I mean, it was basically just, it was a good setting. It was just missing, like, hooks for the players to kind of hook into.
All right. Final thoughts on God King.
All right. Well, if he hopes to do, like, any updates on it, I really would like there to be more of a focus on putting some more background lore, so that way, you know, people have a good ideal of, like, how they're going to interact with everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, like, the way we did the playtest, it was literally us being conquistadors and invading the land to get whatever treasure we wanted to get or do whatever we wanted to do. And we purposely set ourselves up for failure so that way it wasn't just obvious we have our thunder sticks and we, you know, we rock like a hurricane across the plains.
Yeah.
Woody.
And, of course, you know, my... With, and of course, you know, aside from my negative of of the trust mechanic itself, because that's never going to change, more than likely, but it's the only thing that turned me off from it.
Go ahead. Final thoughts.
All right. Overall, I like this a lot. I like the simple resolution system, and I actually like the setting because it's not overbearing in what it expects you to do, basically. But I think I agree with Alex that there should be more, there should be more basically adventure hooks or something that you can, you know, to inspire the GM to do some stuff. Because I think it must have been pretty difficult to come up with, you know, kind of stuff to bounce off of us as we were right. going through and just kind of, like, marauding everything. But yeah, overall, I like the game, and I think overall the experience was pretty good for a playtest. I mean, as I said, the card program didn't exactly work for me anyway. But yeah, I think it's a pretty solid game.
Okay. Yeah, Virtual Deck was a disaster. And really made the playtest more difficult than it needed to be. But yeah, I pretty much 100% agree with what Rudy said. This is a really well-made game. My biggest issue was that maybe all of the pieces don't fit together as smoothly as they could have. You know, the resolution in some ways seems to be sticking out a little bit from the fiction, and all that is kind of sticking out a little bit separate from the character generation and the social dynamic stuff. But really, a lot of really great creative ideas, which is something that you love to see in a role-playing game, especially in an atmosphere where we get one goddamn apocalypse world hack after another. You know, where the formula has become: take Apocalypse World, hack it, add your favorite book series or TV show, sell 500 copies. Seeing something like this that's so full of creative ideas is fucking refreshing. And seeing a game like this that uses really cool, socially competitive mechanics, also refreshing. Yeah. One thing that I need to say, because it didn't get mentioned, this is a beautiful document. He says full color, and he's not kidding. Every page is wonderful to look at.
Yeah.
And it's just, and he is a graphic designer by trade, according to his website, which is spiffup.org. And you can tell. It's a great looking document. It's beautiful. And that really adds to the game, I think. So, in closing, this is the first game that we've talked about on the podcast that we've critiqued that is actually finished and available. You can buy this game right now. If you go up to spiffup.org, that's one word, /godking, one word, you can buy it for $5. Five little dollars, you can get the PDF, which I think is a pretty great deal. I mean, what else are you going to do with $5? Buy a hamburger from McDonald's and get one step closer to diabetes? Rudy?
Diabetes.
Or are you going to buy a really creative, remarkable little RPG? So, that said, shifting gears to randomness. Okay, so there's really two sides to this, I think. Maybe there's more than that, but I can see two. One is randomness in character generation, and the other is randomness in conflict resolution. And we could take those separately, we could take them together, but what I want to do is, really, I don't have any right to comment on this. I have not been oppressed by the mechanics the way that someone here has. Randomness has taken one member of this group and violated them time and time again, and I think he should be given the first and also probably the last word on this subject. Rudy.
Right, yeah, I've been raped by randomness pretty much every time it's been used in a game. The only time I haven't really been hit by it hard is in character generation, which I think is a good place for it. Because that that helps inspire people, you know, to it helps inspire ideas and stuff like that, as opposed to generating resolution outcomes that, you know, can make people feel stilted and kind of, you know, like, why the fuck am I losing over and over and over again just because of a bad role or whatever. But I'm not totally against randomness in games as much as I've been screwed by it. I just think that the random element has to make sense for the game that you're designing. Like, if you're designing a game that's meant primarily to be social strategy, then that's what it should be. You know, it shouldn't be, there shouldn't really be mechanics to kind of cloud that with random outcomes. I mean, I understand the purpose of random outcomes in that they're basically to, I guess, well, there's probably a few purposes, but I guess mainly it's to kind of, you know, help the fiction move forward, you know, with something, because it, not everything can be a collaborative decision, basically. I mean, and it's boring if everything is a collaborative decision, but I think there is maybe other ways to, like I said, maybe strategic or mechanics that focus on strategy or, you know, the social dynamics. I think if you can use those, then it's better off that you use those as opposed to using a randomizer, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, for me, there are 60 different ways to talk about this subject.
Yeah, at least.
And I threw 60 out there because I was using a random number.
Oh.
But anyways, what you were getting at, Will, Rudy, was a lot of the times a random mechanic is used as an arbitrator, as a thing that is divorced of the players, because like I've said before, like a lot of the times if you don't have a random mechanic of some sort, it comes down, or you know, like it comes down to whoever wants to put their foot down the hardest to get what they want.
Yeah.
Like in terms of choosing what they want to do. So having a random thing kind of takes that control away from them. And people can feel differently based on how much control is taken away from them because of a random thing of some sort. So it's kind of important to understand both the negatives and the positives of what a random thing can do for you.
Yeah. Since we're I want to get to randomness and character generation because I have some things to say about that. But since we're talking about randomness in conflict resolution, I don't know. I pretty much agree with Rudy that if you can make something strategic, if your game's about strategy, then do it. And if you have to make it arbitrary, make it arbitrary in a fun way. I mean, I don't see much that's, you know, in D&D, there's something very exciting about rolling a 20, and there's something very exciting about rolling a 1, but everything between 2 and 19 is a success or a failure, and not a very interesting one, no matter how you cut it. And it's right. Being frustrated because of a string of failures, or being, like, not even happy, being like preserving the status quo because you got a string of successes. And unless it's a really dramatic success or a really dramatic failure, it doesn't seem to contribute much to the game in terms of excitement. It doesn't do much to make the game more compelling or interesting or to generate drama. Now, I know I'm just talking about D&D here and other games that use a similar, critical success, critical failure, a bunch of stuff in between mechanics. But that, to me, there's nothing interesting about that. And there's certainly nothing interesting about it compared to, say, a mechanic based on categories or something. Based on some board game or a social game or based on Mafia or based on chess, to take an example from one game designer I know and admire. Something that has a real strategic component or something that really involves social back and forth between players. Because those are the elements of the game, right? Whether you view it primarily as a game or primarily as a narrative or primarily as a social experience, those are the big elements, Randomness doesn't enhance any of those elements. Strategy makes a game more interesting. Social give and take makes the social experience. Whether it's competitive give and take or something that reveals something about the person across the table from you, like in a game like Breaking the Ice or something, for example. Really, those are the things that enhance the social component of the game, not randomness. And when you're talking about narrative, it's something that generates interesting ideas, new directions for the fiction, or that structures the fiction in a way that mimics, the structure of drama, that builds towards a climax or whatever. Those are the things that enhance the different possible aspects of the game. And randomness, just pure arbitrary randomness, for resolution anyway, does not do that. So.
All right. Well, what I want to get at here, because you danced over the D&D thing pretty quickly, because I wanted to say something about that. What your point was, which makes perfect sense, is that with D&D, it's a tactical game. It's supposed to be about, it's supposed to be a lot of book heavy, keeping track of stats and stuff like that. And then the randomness that they use there's no real tactical influence whatsoever. Right. So it ruins the entire purpose of the game itself, because there's no longer that tactical feel. It's you get lucky of being able to do what you want to do. So that's a clear example of randomness being completely unnecessary in that style of game.
Right.
Yeah, no, I agree, definitely, because in D&D there is no real way to mitigate the randomness strategically. Some games like Fate has fate points and stuff that you can spend. You can store them up and you can spend at times when you get fucked by the dice. Or whatever. Some other games use similar mechanics. Or they use mechanics that at least allow you to kind of gauge success or failure based on, the size of the dice or whatever. But D&D doesn't necessarily do any of that.
Right.
And when you fail, you just feel like shit because you just failed. Unless it's a critical
failure. And then it's crazy
cool.
Because
something awesome.
Right. Yeah. But I think the mini depression you have over failure is because it's a tactical game.
Right.
And and all your power that you felt, it was felt because you took all this effort to, make it work, and the randomness that shouldn't be there screwed you over, not because you failed to allocate your resources correctly.
Right.
So that's what we're getting at with that example is, if you're the main thing that matters is consistency with what you're trying to portray. If you want randomness to matter, make randomness something that revolves around the entire like mechanics of like resolution of character building and stuff like that. If you want it to be tactical, if you want people to focus on trying to be the best they can be, you know, the best they ever was, you know, Pokemon, got to catch them all. If you want it to be like that, you need to enforce the tactical aspect.
Right.
And that doesn't happen with D&D. It doesn't happen with some other games as well. But that's just an example of you need to like when you're designing a game or when you're playing a game even, you need to make sure everything is in cohesion. You need to make sure everything's together of what the purpose is.
Right. And I agree 150%. But I want to talk about randomness and character generation. And I want to draw a distinction here, because in my mind there are two types of randomness in character generation. There's randomness in character generation that provides a future advantage in play. This is something like your stats in D&D, right? But it may not be purely a mechanical advantage, but it gives you some kind of advantage in play. And then there's randomness in character generation that inspires play, that inspires an idea of how you might be, you know, inspires some component of your character, inspires some component of, you know, the fiction. So, in my mind, category A, randomness for advantage, is bad, 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 horrible, bad, stupid, dumb. Category B, randomness and character generation that inspires, is awesome, amazing, awesome, epic, epic, godlike, combo, something, sleep deprivation. But anyway, my point is this. You have games, there are a lot of games where you roll stats at the beginning of the game, like D&D. Or two recent examples from games that we've played on the podcast, so as not to belabor D&D anymore. One, Oceans, where you have just a few stats at the beginning of the game, and they're determined randomly. This means you roll bad on one of these stats and you're fucked. And not just bad, but I mean it introduces an imbalance into the game at the beginning of the game. And the more D&D and GURPS and other games that have other big crunchy games that have a lot of numbers mitigate this problem by having a lot of different stats and having a lot of different elements that are determined randomly at the beginning of the game. So maybe my strength is an 8, but I got a 16 in dex, and I have more, and I roll better on my hit points than anyone else. Good. So, you know, I've got some good to mitigate the bad. Not totally, you know, and sometimes, but generally, if you have a DM who's even remotely benevolent, if you roll a totally shit character, he says, no, throw that out, roll a new one. But when you have a game that's very mechanically simple, having that kind of randomness at the beginning, if you only have like 3 or 4 stats or 3 or 4 mechanical components, and they're all determined randomly, and they're all qualitative components, meaning, or they all give you some kind of advantage in play or disadvantage in play, that means that getting screwed on one of them can be it. It can really cripple you throughout the game, and it can cripple your ability to appreciate the game. And also, it can create a huge discrepancy in the way that two different players, the ability of two different players to enjoy the game, to have an influence on the game. which is something we saw in Oceans, which was a good game for the most part, which was a game I liked and gave a pretty positive review to, but which was really, was hurt by that randomness in initial character generation. In fact, we had one character, I think, was it your
character? That was me.
Rudy, you were, from the start, yeah. You only had like 3 points. And so you could only have a very small impact on the heist as it played out. And I had one character that had like a ridiculous number of points and was, as a result, was able to have a really significant impact. And that's something, you don't want that kind of power imbalance, that kind of imbalance and influence in the game at the beginning, because then it flows through the whole game. Example number two of the same problem in a more narrative-focused game, in a game where this problem isn't exactly a statistical problem, but is still a problem of influence. Final Hour of a Storied Age, with the star chart, where you roll up sentences that become seeds that influence your character concept. Now, this was a great idea. This was one of my favorite ideas. But the way it's executed can lead someone to end up with like 15, 20 entries, 15 to 20 different words that they can use to generate their sentences, which then go on to generate their character. And it was also possible to get as few as 3, and I know because I got 3 when I rolled it up.
Yeah.
And from the beginning, I felt, first of all, I just got locked out of the coolest part of character generation, which was getting to take all these random elements and make something cool out of them. But also, my ability to have a narrative influence on the game was limited right away, because all of that grew out of your character concept. And because of the way that, I'm not going to go through the game all over again, but because of the way that character generation functions and the way that leads into plot, you know, deciding who's the antagonist and who's the protagonist of the game, and different elements of how the narrative in the game is structured, getting locked out of these terms at the beginning of the game locks you out of the rest of that as the game goes on. It means that basically from the beginning of the game, you're going to take the back seat in the story. And you didn't choose to do that. It's not, oh, my playstyle is to be a follower, which is fine. But it's because of the way that the dice rolled, you're going to sit and you're going to watch and you're going to have a nominal impact in the game. And so it's something that can have just as much of a negative impact on a narrative story game as it does on a crunchy mechanical game like D&D. And it's something that I think you need to be really alert to. Now, all that said, one of my favorite things in the world are random elements in character generation. If everyone gets the same number of elements, and if they're inspirational, if they give you ideas for play. And to mention the game we were talking about before, the truth mechanic in God King, where everyone gets one truth, and it gives you, and it immediately gives you character ideas, because it's just a little, you know, it's nothing that really says this is the character you're playing, but it gives you a, you know, that first grain that the rest of the character can form around, that first burst of inspiration, that original idea. And other games that, whether it's by being dealt a playing card that gives you some kind of character archetype to work with, or whether it's rolling a character concept off a chart, or something like that, you know, I think those are really cool because, first of all, they eliminate some of the barrier to entry for new players and for people who aren't comfortable with RPGs. Like, a lot of times, character creation can be hell for a new player. But yeah, being able to say, here's a little idea, here's something to get you started, can be great. Can really get them into the game fast and get the game moving. It's also really great for experienced players because it can force you to, it can take you in a different direction. It can get you to move outside of that groove that you always follow when it comes to character creation and to try something totally different. or maybe just a little bit different. But those elements, I love them. I can't have enough of them.
Yeah. I'd pretty much agree with all of that. Yeah, I mean, random elements in character generation, not so great when it's statistics or things that can fuck you later on in the game, and pretty awesome when it's stuff that can inspire your ideas of how to play a character, or even just, you know, get the game moving quickly, you know, where everybody gets a character and it's, you know, it's generated for you. Both really good things to have, I think.
Well, I'm on a different, at least thought process with good. What you guys are going for, because, like, for me, randomness, like I said before, it's the intention behind the randomness that matters to me the most. Not that there's randomness in general, because I like the idea of randomness just because, it just, like I said, like I think it holds back what, like one guy deciding whether or not everyone should have a bad time, because it removes the power from one person. You know, that's why you have a random thing, but it also could increase the power based on how randomness is done. And like I said before, that's what I'm saying. It's all based on the intentions that randomness will be doing for you, and also the random, like the intentions of the game, because. Like, going for example, the tactician style, you don't want random stats because it'll just weaken some people and empower others, and then they get to have whatever they want for the game go on throughout the entire game. They have the power to do whatever they want. And then meanwhile, if you pick a game that's story-driven, that, you know, like, you want to pick a certain, like, you want to design a character for this world, and now the game tells you that you don't get a choice in the matter, we tell you how you're going to play,
right.
That can ruin it just as much, where random inspiration can ruin how you want to play, because you no longer get the choice of acting in a certain way.
Hmm. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah,
no. Yeah, that's how I feel about it. Or you really, it's all about approaching the randomness and making sure it doesn't screw over both parties. Because, like, let's see here. Because I know they always have optional rules for, you know, for, like, you know, like, for example, like, go with D&D again. They have an optional rule to do a point-by system, yes. Of increasing your stats.
Right.
So that way you can't fuck people over.
Or even using a standard array, which is what I've started doing.
Oh, yeah, that too. Where they have optional rules to just not allow that extreme you know, teeter-totter, that scale of power. They have ways to prevent that. Like, if they had ways to prevent that for character creation, like, let's say, like, you play a game like Gamma World, where it's, you know, it's random character creation, a lot of the stuff I don't want to do for random character creation, and that'll throw me out of the loop. I'd rather have the ability to choose what I'm going to be and be done with it. Like, so yeah, a lot of the times it really is the intentions of the game for me when it comes to randomness. I really want people to, like, if a designer's going to go at randomness, I need there to be a good purpose behind it. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll give an example of my own stuff, so that way it's not just a comparison of other people's work. Like, for me, like, when I was doing, you know, Crystal Capers, like, the intentions behind the randomness was that a lot of the times for me, like, when it comes to, like, reality of how interactions work, a lot of it is your skill means only so much, and what happens in the moment really determines the luck, determines what really happens to you. You know, like, you can have 10 years of being, like, a special, like a marksman with a pistol, and all that kind of stuff. But when it comes down to the wire, the current moment, almost anything could be up for grabs. Your skill can only help you so much.
Yeah.
And so when I made my random dice mechanic, that was to enforce the randomness of, were you able to rely upon the history of everything backed upon you? And that's why character creation you choose how well you are in everything because that's your previous skill history. So the randomness set up is trying to enforce the ideals of what I was trying to give. And when you guys played it, it helped you guys a lot because when you saw that, it divorced the pain that people feel when they fail stuff.
Right.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought that was and we mentioned this in play when we were talking about God King, and in fact, we probably could have had, not God King, I'm sorry, when we were talking about Crystal Capers, and in fact, we probably could have had this discussion on that podcast, too. That was an example of randomness used to good dramatic effect, I thought. So, final thoughts on randomness. We're reaching an hour. We're slightly over an hour now, and my ability to communicate has declined to new record lows. So, any final thoughts?
I just wanted to say about the randomness and character generation. As far as, like, generating a concept for your character, I can see where that's not always necessarily a great thing. Like, I think the more, and this is just what I think, but I think the more in detail the situation or the setting is, the less randomness you want, the more kind of, the more you want the players to be able to control what they play so they can have buy-in, I guess.
Mm.
And that's basically all I have.
Can you, would you say the more in detail a setting is, can you give a clearer sense of what
the setting the setting or the situation. Like, if it's like, okay, everybody's going to be playing mercenaries going into Africa to do this or whatever. Like, if it's something like that where it's very established, you want players to have as much autonomy over there, you know, over what kind of mercenary they are, as opposed to just, it seems like that generates buy-in a lot easier if they have autonomy over, you know, something in the situation.
Right.
Because if they didn't choose the setting or they didn't choose the situation, then it's kind of hard for them to have autonomy over, you know, as opposed to a collaboratively built setting or collaboratively built situation.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that, I think. I think another major component is how long the players are committing to this game. If you're talking about a game that's intended to be played for a number of sessions, that's intended to be a lengthy campaign, then I think there's still nothing wrong with having some inspirational stuff that's determined randomly, but they should have a lot of control over how they shape their character, because they're going to be with that character for a while. Whereas I think you can have heavily random inspirational character generation, still not the stuff that gives you an advantage in the game, but inspirational character creation in a game that's meant to be played quickly, for a single short session especially, because then it's basically throwing the players in and saying, try something new, here's what you're doing. You know, it's almost like improv. And I think that can be fun. And I think in that case, you don't need the same level of attachment to your character, and you don't need that the same kind of buy-in that you're talking about, because it's all about having the experience and having it quickly and having it be complete, as opposed to having it be under your control.
Yeah, so for my final thought, I pretty much said everything like as complete as possible. Just, you know, be consistent with what you're trying to do, and randomness will work both ways, regardless of how someone feels.
Okay. So, once again, God King, $5. Come on, you don't need another cheeseburger. You need God King. You can find it at spiffup.org/GodKing, and we're going to have the link up to that on the blog also. So, yeah, $5. Come on. It's a really cool game. I enjoyed it, which is why I'm doing advertising for it. But so yeah, give it a try. That's what I'm saying.
Well, since I'm running ops for McDonald's, I'm obligated to say that you should also buy a cheeseburger with that. With God King. Buy a cheeseburger and buy God King. You can eat it while you're playing.
And since it's a PDF, you won't ruin it by by reading it while you're eating a greasy McDonald's cheeseburger. Which is
Yeah, you won't smear ketchup and mustard all over the pages. You know, things like that.
You might
unless you're really
it's a safe it's a safe bet. Yeah, it's a safe bet that you'll be able to do both.
You might smudge your Kindle up a little bit, but hey.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else that we need to say? Mom's basement.
Oh well, wait, I got one thing.
Yeah.
One last thing here. Because this is for final thoughts here. Unplugging microphone.
Oh, okay. Microphone coming unplugged.
Oh,
did he just unplug his fucking microphone? Oh, I think that's it. I think we're done.
I think he did.
Damn.